All right, everybody. It's not often that I have a male figure on the It Takes Spirit podcast, but I've made a special exception because this guy is just amazing. I really look up to him with the community that he's built. He has an amazing group called We Are The They that do some of the most craziest adventures as well, but also just really helping men come together as one and build an amazing community. He's been to over 106 countries, so I definitely want to tap into that today. He's an investor. He's a best-selling author. He's got a brand new book out, and he's just a very accomplished individual in the entrepreneurial space. And I'm very excited to have him really share his story and the grit that it's taken him to get to where he is today. So, Jimmy Rex, welcome to the show.
So good to be here. Thanks so much for having me, Becca.
You're so welcome. So today is actually the day that the book is coming out. We were just touching on it, but how are you feeling? It's exciting when a brand new book comes out.
It is. You know, it's kind of funny. Like when you get to the actual day, all the work is pretty much done. And so there's not a whole lot to do today other than just kind of, you know, we have a party tonight and a couple podcasts that we're doing during the day. But it feels good. You know, this is a book that I'm super proud of. I started making this book last year when I was coaching with Ed Mylett, and he basically said, "Hey, man, you've got to take what you're doing to the masses and, you know, you've got to get a book. Like it's really what we need to do." And so he wrote the foreword for it and really was a big part of it for me. And it's just, I think it's a book that will change lives for the next 100 years. So super excited to have today be the day that that all starts.
Excellent. Now, there's lots of people like, "Oh my gosh, I'd love to write a book. I'd love to have this community," but kind of take us back a little bit of your journey. What was it that made you become who you are today? I know we're not going to dive into every part of your journey, but give us a little bit of background of who you are and the grit that you've used to get to where you are today.
Yeah, you know, because of, you know, the theme of your podcast, I'll tell, you know, there's these key moments in our life. And I think in the moment, we don't know that they're key moments, right? But where we kind of have to make decisions of what that thing is going to mean. A lot of times it can be a pleasure that we get or a pain that we get. And, you know, I can think the specific moments in my life, these key moments where, you know, something I remember when I was 14 years old, I'll tell a quick story. I was a huge baseball fan. Like that was everything to me. My whole family, that's all we talked about was baseball. And when I was 14 years old, I was at the year end event with where they, you know, give the trophy to the first and second place teams. And then they call the all-star team. And it was at this amphitheater and they were down on the field and I'm sitting there with my 15 best friends, right, Rebecca? And I'm sitting there with them and one by one, they start calling up the 14-year-old all-star team. And you'd go down onto the field and all the parents are there, all the grandparents, I mean, everyone's there. And I remember I didn't have a very good year, if I'm being honest, but I'd always been one of the key players. I'd always been an all-star. My brother was like the 2-time state MVP of this, you know, I mean, this is what I did. And one by one, they start calling the kids, and these are all my best friends. Actually, to this day, some of my best friends. I talked to two of them yesterday to give you an idea, you know, 30 years later. And I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden, I notice there's about 5 or 6 trophies left on the table, and it's one less than us sitting here in the line. And the other guys are all some of our key players. And I'm like, "Oh, I might not have made it." And one by one, they call up these last 5 guys until I'm sitting there by myself. I'm the only one they did not call up. I didn't make the team. And so all my friends are on the field, getting their hat, getting their trophy, celebrating. I'm sitting there by myself. I can feel the shame and the disappointment of all the, you know, my parents and my friends' parents. And I didn't know what to do. I just started crying, right? I'm literally sitting there by myself. And, but I had this moment of clarity that I just is a grace from God. And I had this moment where I said, "Jimmy, you weren't good enough. Like, you didn't try enough. You didn't work hard enough." And I knew it. And instead of playing the victim, my dad was pissed at the coach and pissed at everything else. And I knew it. I was like, "No, it was me." And I just vowed to myself that day. I said, "You know, I will never feel this way again." It was the worst I'd ever felt. I said, "I will never feel this way again because somebody outworked me." And that was the day that I really became, you know, I think the first moment where I just decided like I was going to live a certain way and I was never going to play victim and I was going to take responsibility and I was going to work harder than anybody else and I was going to succeed. And that was the day I became an achiever, I guess.
Wow. I love that story. I have a very similar story. I got dropped from the field hockey team. I was playing for the South of England field hockey team. And I remember being dropped. And I remember that feeling that I had to go and like, you know, tell my mom and dad and the people at my school. And it just mortified me. And I was like, never, ever am I going to fail at anything again. But you know what? Why do you feel like sometimes those things happen to people and it either inspires you or it makes you play the victim, and you use that as the excuse why not to do something.
Yeah, I don't know where it starts at. I mean, you know, I grew up in a house where, God bless them, they're doing their best, but there was a lot of victim mentality. You know, I remember my dad complaining about just different laws that weren't fair, and my mom, you know, was always blaming her youth on stuff, and I was just, and it kind of bothered me. And so, thankfully, as a kid, I didn't like that, and so I think that's why I went the other way with that. But I don't know. I mean, obviously, as an adult, I think it's getting around mentors and people that can help us see the difference, right? Like Tony Robbins, when I started listening to all of his stuff, and, you know, one of his famous lines, he says, look, you can be a victim, but it doesn't serve you. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what a beautiful line. Because like everyone has a reason. You can blame, like, you can be like, yeah, like because this happened, my life isn't very good or whatever else, or I couldn't become anything because of, you know, how I was raised. But if you play that game, like, you know, he says people will fight for their stories so bad to stay in that broken place. And it's like, yeah. And so there's empathy to be had, but also it's just, you know, being around people that don't do that. In my world, immediately if somebody starts playing the victim, we'll just, you know, kindly correct them and be like, dude, where's the gifts in this? Like, hey, what could have you done differently? Like, where did this go wrong for you? Like, you know, take the responsibility and extreme ownership of it. And so I think it's who we surround ourselves with. You know, I mean, we become the beliefs we have, the thoughts we had, and the people that we hang around. Like, we just do. That's how you form your beliefs, and that's going to form your actions. And then that is what creates a life.
Yeah, I mean, we're so aligned on that. I mean, Jim Rohn says, for things to get better, we've got to get better. For things to change, we have to change, right? And it really is down to us. I so inspired that you your mentor, one, the person that you get to work on one-on-one with is Ed Milet. And, you know, you touched on there about proximity. We know that proximity is power. You hang around with 5 drug addicts, you're going to be the 6th. You hang around with 5 millionaires, you're going to be the 6th. How important is mentorship, do you believe? And do you feel like, you know, in my audience too, people are just kind of starting to either just exercise their entry level to personal development. And the idea of a mentor is like, why would you even need that? Like, I remember back in the day, it's almost like, why would I need like self-help? When do you need to get a mentor, and why is it so important for you to get a mentor?
Well, I think we should always have mentors, and, you know, and if you can't afford, you know, one in person, then, you know, read their book, for example, you know, and you can kind of start with that. Like, there's never an excuse not to do it. But what a mentor does is they're able to compress time, right? Like, they're able, I like to look for, most people become friends with whoever lives by them, whoever their kids, like, parents are, you know, kids' friends' parents are, things like that. For me, I say, who inspires me? Who's where I want to be? Who is absolutely living in a way that just is inspiring? And then I do whatever I can to be around them, because what happens is, like, even with our own selves, like, the secret to this whole thing is you envision where you want to be 5 years from now or whatever, you know, and then you go, okay, who is that person? How does that person act? What emotions does that person experience? What happens for that person's world to act the way it does? And then you go, where am I at today? And then the entire game is to shrink the gap. So you act as if you're that person. Well, what a mentor does is it shows you find out who is where I want to be that used to be where I'm at. And then you just follow their roadmap, and you can avoid a lot of the obstacles and problems they had to go through. And so that's what my whole book's about. That's what my whole program is about, is I basically take 10 years of me being on this path, right, of self-development, going to every conference, seminars where I met, you know, your boyfriend at, is in Fiji at an event. And like, I'm always obsessed with just becoming a better version of myself. But you put yourself in those rooms, you take all the best things, and then I can give you in 2.5 years what it took me 10 to figure out, because I can cut out all the minutia and the things that maybe weren't as productive. And so that's why mentors are so valuable. It's why they're so important. You know, I had my first mentor in real estate. Real quick, my first 6 months as an agent, I sold 3 houses, like 3 or 4. I was terrible. I almost had to get out of the business. Then I got a mentor, and I got lucky. I got one of the best mentors in the entire business, probably the best mentor in the business. My next 6 months, I ended the year with 60 home sales. The next year, I sold 98 homes with one assistant. Like, it absolutely changed my life, because he taught me what to say. He taught me how to say it. He held me accountable to doing it every single day and made sure it got done. And so, like, just having that one person in my life literally was the catalyst for everything else good that came after that.
I think that's so important. And, you know, I work a lot in network marketing, and it's kind of like when I get a brand new distributor in, and, you know, they don't get the results in the first 90 days. Like you said, you sold like one home, and then it's like, hey, am I not good enough for this? Do I give up? And it's like, no, you sought out a mentor, but then you also listened. If somebody is struggling right now, they see that somebody, you know, has a great life, they are selling homes, they are, you know, doing a great job in whatever business that they're in, but for some reason there's this limiting belief inside of their head that doesn't allow them to listen to their mentor. Now, when I first got my mentor, it was like I was a puppet on a string. He said jump, I said how high. You know, whatever he told me to do, I never questioned it. But I feel like people now are questioning things more. What advice would you give to someone that has a mentor, but maybe is just not listening or maybe just not following the plan?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of pieces to that. I think one is there is so much noise out there, so it's a little bit more difficult. You got to be more intentional about who you listen to, right? Like, make sure people are legit. Like, they really do have the life that you want. They really do have success. They really know the formula. But the second piece of that, it's an interesting one. I think a lot of people sign up for a coach or a coaching program or a mastermind so that they can feel like they're doing something productive. And so this is one of the things I saw real estate agents do all the time. I call it creative avoidance. You know, they convince themselves they're doing something effective, but they're avoiding doing the thing they know they really need to do. And so, and this is, you know, I did an ice bath this morning. I'm a fan of them. But one of the problems with the ice bath is in 3 minutes, you feel like you did something productive today. But what you really needed to do was put 6 or 8 hard hours of pounding the phones in at work. But if you can just take an ice bath or hit the gym real quick because you enjoy going to the gym, then you can all of a sudden feel like you're being productive. And it's like, look, where in your life do you need help? Like, where are you really falling short? For a lot of people, it's either physically or financially or romantically. Those are usually the three things. And it's like, what work are you avoiding doing? What do you need to change? Like, if I was coaching you for a day, this is a question I love to ask people, where I say, look, if I were to step into your shoes for one day and trade you places, what would I know would be the first thing I needed to switch about how you live your life? And they always know. They already know the answer to it. The problem used to be, what do I do? Now it's pretty, like, there's information everywhere. There's so much information. Now it's just like, literally, how do you get yourself to do it? And so you have to convince yourself not only to sign up for the program, you have to show up for the program. If you're going to, you know, hire a coach, don't be an asshole where you ask them things all the time, but don't do any of it. Like, actually do what they tell you is going to make a difference. You know, for me, one of the reasons to hire a coach is because I'm like, oh, I better do my homework assignment or I'm going to get yelled at on Thursday when I get back on that call, you know? And so it's that accountability piece. But, you know, I think for a lot of people, they can feel like they're doing something with their life. They can tell their wife or husband that they're changing because, you know, I've had people join my program just so they can tell people they're in the program working on themselves. It's like, try to help their dating life or their social status. It's like, no. You need to show up and do the work. Otherwise, nothing's going to change.
Yeah, I just had the same conversation. I spoke to 500 people in Slovenia. And I said, pick up the phones before you do your laundry. And they were like, oh, yes. I was like, how many of you, you know, are doing your laundry? You know, I don't do my laundry. We have a housekeeper. I was like, so it's great. I don't even do my laundry, right? But how many people, when they're doing, you know, they're stepping into entrepreneurship, they're stepping into network marketing or real estate or whatever it is, and they're actually doing the little tasks, right? The gym, the ice bath, doing your laundry, all before, instead of actually picking up the phone. So I'm so glad that you brought that up. Now, tell me a little bit about We Are The They, because what you have created is just unbelievable. Like, I know that you've got waiting lists, you've got like group after group after group. Where did that inspiration come from? And how did you create such a loyal community?
Yeah, no, thanks for asking that. You know, it's interesting because I was doing real estate. And one of the ways that I started in 2010, I got really tired of calling for sell by owner. So I went to my real estate coach. I said, I think I'm going to leave the business. He said, well, why? I said, I don't enjoy doing it this way. He said, well, what do you want to do? I said, I want to be the guy that's throwing all the parties and events and taking people on trips and, you know, like coaching people and doing all these things. And that's why they want to do business with me. He goes, well, let's do that. So I changed my whole business in 2010. And I started throwing a monthly event for my clients. And so literally, I just did one last weekend. We did an Easter egg drop and had, I mean, 600-700 people there. And I dropped thousands of eggs from a helicopter on all these kids. Hilarious. And they're getting pelted in the face with like jelly bean eggs and stuff. But that's a core memory for a kid, you know? And so I just did these different events every single month, rent out the water park, rent out the theater, like do this giant fireworks show that we had 14,000 people show up to last year. And I just do these different events and I loved it. And I was building community. And I was, you know, I basically said with real estate, I said, if I can give enough value in every aspect, then the money will just roll in. And it was, and it worked. And I became the number one agent in the state of Utah. My last full year doing it, My team sold 497 homes with three agents. I sold the most expensive home ever in the state of Utah, which was basically a mountain range at the time. And, but you know, it was funny, Rebecca, because I was sitting there and I was like, I need to do something different now. Like, it had kind of ran its course. I had maximized what I could do doing that. And so I started playing with this idea. I was like, well, what would I do if I didn't do real estate? You know, like, what would be next? And it was interesting. It took me about 2 years to come up with it, and really putting a lot of time and effort into it. But I started listening to what people were reaching out to me for. I kept getting people on Instagram saying, man, where do I find a group of friends like you guys have? You guys have the most amazing friends. You've met several of them. I'm very blessed to have amazing friends, lots of them that really care deeply. And I said, oh, I know how to build that. And so I said, you know what? That's what I can do. What better gift can you give somebody than help them meet other great people, connect them with other amazing humans, have other friends in their life, right? And so that's what I did. So I took a right turn with my career. I left my real estate team to my real estate business partner, and I launched what is now We Are the They. And, you know, and I'd been to all these other masterminds and events, so I kind of knew what I wanted this to look like. And I wanted it to be 50 guys in this original group that just with those 50 guys, I knew they could go deep if we got vulnerable and authentic and got into integrity and really, you know, were able to be seen for the first time and loved in that state. And so that's what the whole program is about, is really, you know, I talk about this is taking a moral stand, changing our behaviors, and then, you know, holding each other accountable, but having the support of the community of each other with us. And so it's been really cool. It's this first group ends next month. It's a 2.5-year program. And I'm pretty sad about it, but you know, it's really cool because these relationships are so deep now, they're so thick that they'll live on forever. But so that's what I get to do now. And so part of building community is doing extreme emotional experiences together. So we do a lot of adventure. I took 70 guys to Run with the Bulls last year in Spain. I'm actually leaving a week from tomorrow, going to Africa with 25 guys. We're gonna go to Victoria Falls, go do a safari and some of that stuff. So just doing amazing things with each other where you really build that connection deep, very fast. And again, for me, it's, you know, I think that the devil divides us and God brings us together. And we saw with the whole COVID pandemic and all that stuff that they were doing whatever they could to isolate us and make us feel like we were alone. And I just fought that from day one. You know, I was the super spreader for sure. I was putting together poker nights, and I put together this thing called the $100 dinner club, where we'd all go to a restaurant and everybody would bring $100 for the tip. And they couldn't really get mad at us because we were leaving $3,000 to $5,000 tips for our waitresses and steward servers and stuff. And so, you know, I'm just committed to this process. I love creating community. I love helping people get together. And every single day on my feed on Facebook and Instagram, I see people that I connected doing life together and experiencing life at the highest levels, experiencing those emotions. And, you know, that's a legacy. Like for me, it's, you know, it's not when I'm 100 years from now, what people are going to know me for. It's while I'm here, it's the people that whose lives get better because I was in it. And that to me is a beautiful way to live. And so for me, it's, I've gone all in on this, and yeah, we're almost to 500 members now and growing. And it's just been a really beautiful opportunity to create something special.
That's so awesome. Let me ask you, when you first created the event, because I know that lots of people love the idea of having community and having people together, right? Because I really do. I believe you. It's a legacy. Introducing, and it's not about competition, right? It's about, let me introduce this person and this person that would just get on great, or they would help each other, or they would just be a great fit. But when you first thought, I'm going to make my first event, were you ever afraid that no one was going to turn up?
Yeah. And by the way, I mean, I'm sitting 3 feet from my podcast studio director, right? Like he met his fiance, they're getting married in 3 months, through my best friend when I was 12, who only came together, their worlds collided because I started this group and they ran into each other. You know, I mean, it's like, that's so fun to me. That's so cool. Like those are the kinds of things there will literally be children made from that relationship because I decided to do this. Like, that's really cool, you know? Anyway, to answer your question, yeah, I was terrified. I mean, it was funny. Here's to give you an idea. So I launched November 1st, 2021, and I gave myself 30 days to sell the program. I didn't even, it didn't start till December 3rd because I didn't know if people were going to sign up. I was like, okay, I know I'm a salesman. I'm like, I can run ads. I can get on the phones. I can call my friends, get them to sign up. So like that part of me was like, I think I can make this work if I get enough time to sell people. Well, in 8 hours of launching, I had 147 people apply for the 50 spots. And so I was terrified though. I remember the week before I did like a full on night with like a couple friends. I was doing some meditations. I was like, man, what if this doesn't work? But I kind of just leaned into it anyway. You know, I had Ed Milet, on my podcast recently and we spoke about this. He said, the people that are the most successful just have this ability to take action, not needing to know if it's going to work. I thought that was so brilliant. And it's so funny because I had this really beautiful advantage though, Rebecca. When I was younger, I did a lot of stuff and I look back now, I'm like, somebody should have tackled that kid. But I started my first business at 21. I went on a Mormon mission when I was 19 to a foreign country. I didn't speak their language for 2 years with, you literally can't call home. You don't know anybody there. Like, it's crazy. And, you know, I started this Christmas light business and then I started a TV show and I have, you know, copies of some of the show. And I mean, I am a baby. I wouldn't have trusted that kid to go get my milk and cereal, you know? And I had a full on TV show that I directed, that I edited, that I was the producer of, that I was the host of. And it worked. We were the highest rated show on Sundays in Utah. And anyway, so the reason I say all that is because what's funny is my first five or six ventures that I did, my meat company, my Christmas light company, none of them made me money. I lost money on pretty much all of them. Like, I actually was getting my ass kicked. You know, my first real estate investments, I didn't know what I was doing. I was buying all these properties with nothing down. The market turned. I ended up having to short sell two homes and then I had to keep the debt and pay those off, 160 grand debt. I mean, it was like, I got my ass handed to me. So by all means, I was a complete failure. But the gift of my life, Rebecca, was every person around me, they just honored that I was going for it. And so instead of feeling like a failure, every person was like, dude, heard about the TV show, heard about the Christmas light business, heard about, you know, this and that. And they were so like, just excited for me. And they were so like, just amazed that I was willing to do all this. I didn't tell anybody that I basically lost my ass on all of them, that I didn't make any money. But because of that, I learned at a very young age that the gift of that was the failure is in not doing it. The failure is in not trying. Like, you know, my TV show, I ended up selling it to some other guys and it didn't make any money for them. And I ended up losing like 40K on it. And it kind of just went away. And everybody, like, if you were like looking at the outside in, if you were just looking at this thing on a spreadsheet, be like, man, what a colossal failure. I met every major business owner in town. I met every restaurant in town because we'd go film at their locations. They were my sponsors. I learned how to sell people that were doing very successful things. I was able to contact some of the most successful guys in town to put them on my dating show. All the cutest girls in town, I'd hit them up and they'd come on my dating show. So like, I built this network from this TV show that would have taken 30 years to build. I'm not even joking, but I had this huge community already. And from there, it just kept building on itself. And so every quote unquote failure just helped me get more and more access to more future things that I could do. And so the failure, I learned very quickly, if it doesn't work, you're going to get a lesson out of this. You're going to learn some things. And so for me, the only thing that's a failure is if I don't try and I know I need to. And so that's why, you know, even though, and absolutely, I was terrified, like terrified. I still, like, we're launching my next group May 1. And I'm nervous it won't fill up. Like, it's an irrational thought. We have so many people that are a part of this now. But I have that thought. And I'm like, what if nobody shows, you know? And the truth is you just do it anyway and you just lean into it and not being attached to the outcome. Just, you know, I always say, if you can focus on what goes in the funnel, that's the top end. That's what you control. That's your actions and, you know, your daily habits. Then you and don't control what's happening on the bottom. That's the result, right? Because if you focus on the result, you might not like what you see and you forget to do the actions that create the result. And so anyway, that's kind of the mindset that I have. But yeah, I still get terrified. I absolutely do. And I throw these big, I'm throwing an event tonight for my book launch, you know? And I'm like, what if nobody shows? Like, I'm literally going to spend an hour today texting everybody the invite because I want to make sure they show. I'm still worried that nobody will show up for the party. I know there will be hundreds of people there, but that's just what it's a reality. And I don't think that you ever get over that. I think what you do is just learn to lean into that.
Oh, this message is going to hit home like so hard. Exactly what you said is just perfect, because I think a lot of times we get so worried about, you know, people looking at us saying, oh, you're doing this event. What if nobody shows up? No, people are going to have more of an almost a negative attitude on you if you don't go for it. People are going to be excited. If you just go for it, people are going to be excited. They're going to be happy. If you don't go for it, that's where people are going to question you. So I did that too. I mean, I remember when I ran my first, I've done fit camps all over the world, in Ecuador, in Prague, in the Maldives, all over the place. And I would literally just put out an invite and just see if somebody would turn up. And it's very easy for you to be like, you know what? I'm not going to put an invite out. I'm not going to just promote it. You know, it'd be easier just not to do, because what if nobody turns up? But it's always like, Yeah, but what if five people turned up? And I'm working out with five people. And I mean, in Ecuador, we had like 60 people. I had no idea, right? You know, and then even in the Maldives, I was on this tiny little island and there was three people that watched my workout videos. So I always feel like doing it is always the much better option than not, because, you know, it's going to be fun. You're going to have excitement. But yeah, same with the Everest documentary. I was like, I'm having a trailer. Is anyone going to come? And then you get there and you're like, oh, phew, there's people in the room, right? But it's always that fear. I love that. So tell me a little bit about the book as we kind of wrap up today. Where did the book idea come from? Obviously, I know that you've been working with Ed Milet, you know, one-on-one coaching, which is just amazing. But Be One, what is it about and who is it there to help?
Yeah, so it comes from the Marcus Aurelius quote, which is, waste no more time arguing about what a good man should be one. And the subtitle is How to Be a Healthy Man in Toxic Times. And so that's kind of explains the book a little bit, right? We take people through how to get your house in order and how to, I call it stop leaky energy, right? Where leaky sexual energy and leaky financial energy, where you're just kind of just not dialed in and you're, you know, it's the guy that lingers a little bit too long on, you know, when a woman walks by, or, you know, the married man that's liking a girl's photos too much on Instagram or whatever it might be, right? It's just leaky energy. It feels innocent, but you know damn well it's not, and things like that. And we cover every aspect, you know, like what it looks like to show up, how to be an attractive man, how to help other people, how to make a difference, just all those different things. And I take people through, you know, a lot of people are in that survival stage. I teach them how to get, you know, instead of survival to, you know, stability and then success and then significance and really being able to build a life where you can look back. And I mean, ultimately, the goal of this whole thing is just to live a life that you enjoy. Like, do you wake up every day and you're glad that you're you? You know, do you wake up and know that you can make a difference? Are you looking for opportunities to serve other people? And a lot of those concepts are covered in the book. And again, I just, you know, it's been really hard to capture exactly what we're doing with my program because it's so different than what else is out there. But if you weren't a part of it, you wouldn't know. We also actually made a documentary for your listeners if they want to watch it. It's wattvid.com, wattvid.com. And you can see one of my events. It's the one that Luke came to that it's about an hour 15, and it really takes you through the whole weekend of how we transform and help these men make these changes. And so, you know, the book, though, it's I just wanted to be, there's nothing like it out there right now. There's no guidebook for men. It's very confusing. A lot of the younger generation, they're not connecting. They're not, you know, they don't know like what is right and what is wrong. Like, that's really, you know, we live in confusing times when you can't trust doctors and presidents. And I mean, it's been proven they were lying and they knew it. And like, they always have their own interests. You know, the news you can't trust. It's like, well, where do you get answers from? And so this book is a little bit of a guidebook, but, you know, taken with some examples from my life and things that I've experienced that I really think will make a difference for any men that read it.
My audience is 99.9% female, and I know that there's going to be some women that could be like, I want my man to read this book. What is a good approach to somebody sharing with their partner about you, about the book, about what you do in a way that does not come across coaching?
Yeah, well, I mean, we all know that men shut down when they're coached, right? And so they want to be respected, they want to be supported. And we actually talk about it a little bit in the book. So there's a couple chapters in there, you know, that are for women, how to raise, you know, young boys, and also how to like find, for single women, how to find a man like this that you're looking for. And so it is a book that I recommend for women to read as well. Obviously, it's a book, you know, about how to be a healthy man, but I think understanding some of the challenges that men go through, like one of the gifts of my life is being able to coach these men. And I love men. They want so badly to show up for their families. They want to show up for themselves. And they want to be great husbands and fathers and brothers and sons. And a lot of times they don't even have the skill set to do that. But I think this book, I would recommend to the women, just pick it up and read it yourself. It's an easy read. It's 200 pages. And in the process of you reading it, it will probably catch their attention. They'll wonder why you're reading that book. And then maybe they'll be interested, you know, and you can talk about the concepts in the book and be like, hey, here's something interesting that I read. What are your thoughts on that? And that's a lot different approach than, hey, here's something that's going to help you be better as a man. You know, it's like, it's definitely not that. So I would recommend to the women, like, actually read the book. And in that, you will get a lot out of it and understand your men better. And I think, you know, one of the biggest problems we have in communication is just not knowing how to talk to each other, how to communicate. We talk about that in the book and how to make sure that you know, I grew up with parents that were not able to communicate what was going on and with their feelings. And because of that, there was a lot of toxicity in my home. And unfortunately, you know, they didn't have a program like mine. They didn't have podcasts like this one. They didn't have a book like this one that just came out. And so they were doing the best they could. But, you know, part of why I did all this is like, this is the program my dad needed. This is the information that would have changed his life and given him a safe place to maybe talk about some of these things that, aren't working.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. Well, we'll put all of the links for everything below. And the final question that I have for you today, Jimmy, we ask all of the guests is, what does grit mean to you?
Yeah, I think grit is, you know, I have a quote that I used to have on my wall when I was selling real estate. It's one of my all-time favorite quotes. And it said, the difference between successful and unsuccessful people is successful people have merely learned to do the things that unsuccessful people don't want to do. And I think that's what grit is. Like, you know, it's funny because I'm teaching one of my groups right now about how to enjoy their work more. I'm spending 12 weeks on it. And it's interesting because when we work hard on something, it doesn't mean that if you don't like your job, that you should find a new job. It means you have to find a reason to enjoy working hard. Like I, you know, every time that I, like when I was in the worst real estate market, it was brutal. I mean, it was awful. I had 180 listings one year. I sold like 12 of them. It was brutal. But I went home happy every day because I was working so hard. And so when you're working on something that you know is you, when you have a vision for where you're going or why for why you're doing it, then it feels like passion. When you don't, it just feels like stress. And so I think ultimately understanding that difference, that's what grit is all about. It's like, no, I don't need to, I'm not like, you know, doing something that just makes me so excited every single day, but I'm working my butt off. And because of that, I feel good. And I think that's grit. It's when, you know, what are you doing when no one's looking? What are you doing when, you know, when everyone else is like done, it's like, you know, doing one more and just kind of giving it a little bit more. It's this morning, actually, I had a great example this morning. I was literally in my tub. I was taking a nice bath. I'm like, I got a long day today. I'm going to start my day with a bath. And my buddy hit me up and he's like, dude, cold plunge. Can I come over? I was like, oh, I've already showered, man. Sorry. I got a podcast at 9:30, this podcast. And he's like, all right, well, I'm going to come over and do it myself. I'm like, okay. He was there like literally 30 seconds later. He was probably standing outside my door. I'm like, shit. He took away my excuses. And so I didn't want to do it, but I put my swimsuit on, went and did it, right? I mean, that's great. It's like doing the thing you don't want to do. The last thing I want to do was go do that today. But I knew if I started my day that way, I was going to have a much better day. And so I think that's a longer answer, but those are all the things that come to my mind when I think of grit.
No, I love it. That's so true. It's like when you put your head on the pillow at the end of the day and you know that you've just given it everything, that's the best feeling. Whether you got all the results that you wanted or not, it's just doing your best. I love that. Well, thank you so much, Jimmy. I'm so excited to get the hand on your new book and also to watch your brand new documentary. I know that we saw a little snippet of that where we got to see you in Utah. But thank you so much for being on the show. I appreciate you. And everybody, make sure that you check out all the links below so that you can get access to all of Jimmy's resources that he has to help you become the best version of yourself. Thanks so much, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you.